Welcome, welcome to Hey Kids Comics, and this is going to be the first of several 2016 What'd You Think specials. For Hey Kids Comics, we're talking summer movie fun, and today we are talking about Superman, Batman, Superman versus Batman, Superman loves Batman in an evil kind of way, or Superman v. Batman, Superman slash Batman.
It was actually Superman loves Batman, but they left most of the letters off.
Yeah,
they just left the V in there. I was so confused. Yeah. I thought I was going into a different movie, but I was wrong.
They're supposed to use a plus.
They are, yeah.
And I have got this is Mrs. Jedi Cole, Catherine Houston, and of course accompanied by Andrew Farmer and Jedi Cole Houston.
That's right.
Of Hey Kids Comics.
Shocking.
A lot of love and a little bit of hate on the movie that is going to be making a bazillion bucks. And it doesn't start with Star Wars.
It doesn't. And ironically, this was the movie that I think a lot of people, you know, myself, I wasn't holding out a tremendous amount of hope for it. But a lot of people were prepared for this to fail. I mean, on many fronts, it was it's a DC movie. It's the reasons that everybody thought it was going to fail, and then of course the critical. What's the opposite of acclaim?
Right.
Critical defame.
Yeah, defamation would certainly have suggested. Well, that about wraps it up for DC movies.
Well, let's start then. Take yourself back to before you got to see the movie, when all you had was the trailers and teasers. What were you expecting or hoping to see?
For me, I didn't watch a lot of the trailers or teasers. I did everything in my power to not allow myself to be influenced by anything that was going on out there, because I really wanted a fresh experience. I didn't want to let the haters get into my brain. You know, my thing is, I like Ben Affleck, so I was a supporter for the Ben Affleck Batman from Jump Street. I thought he was going to do a great job before the movie, but I was in the minority. But I didn't. I stayed away from as much of the news as I could. I had very few spoilers. I went in pretty fresh, so I was ready for anything going in. I had a compass and a buck knife, and I was in the jungle. Didn't know where what was going on. So that's where I was.
Your multi-tool and your desalinization pill.
That's right, and a canteen full of water, and.
Yeah, the kit from Dr. Strangelove. You know,
that's right.
Sleeping pills, pep pills.
What about you, JCH?
Well, the thing about it is, like Andy, I actually somehow, without actively trying, managed to avoid most of the trailers and stuff. I was behind Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne / Batman from the outset. Much like Andy, I was in the minority there, I'm sure. But, you know, I didn't see any problem with it. I thought, good night. You know, how many times have I seen this? How many times have I seen, oh, it's Christian Bale as Batman. Oh, it's Val Kilmer as Batman. Oh, it's, you know, fill in the blank as Batman. I mean, I wasn't even born yet, but it was like, oh, it's...
right.
You know, it's Adam West is Batman.
It's Adam West is Batman.
That was actually. I don't think. Yes, I actually was not born yet. So.
So needless to say, you weren't exposed a whole lot, but except for
not a lot, but I was. You know, there were things I knew I could get behind, and then there were things that I knew just weren't going to happen for me.
And I was actively. I actively did not allow myself to get to that place, because people would try to talk to me about it or tell me about it, and I did everything in my power to walk away from those conversations, because I didn't want to be the guy that went in with this idea that the movie was going to be bad. Like, right. I hated that. I did not want that. You know, I didn't want the movie to be bad. I was like, this movie, I want it to be good. So I was like, I'm going to go in fresh and just, and hope for the best. Like, hope for the best, expect the worst. That was my mindset.
Yeah.
Well, I was kind of the same way. I avoided the trailers, but for a different reason that you guys have mentioned. Trailers have gotten so bad about showing the only five funny scenes in the movie, or the only five exciting scenes in the movie, or fill in the blank.
The best joke in the entire film.
There's never any. You go in, gosh, I hope there isn't something I haven't seen, and sure enough, there isn't. So I avoid trailers for that reason. What I was hoping for, and of course this is my own personal opinion, is with the exception of the Can You Read My Mind flight scene Superman movie I guess now is old enough to be a classic, they've never made a decent Superman movie ever since. They can't seem to, for the life of them, no matter how lean or mean or buff or gorgeous or whatever angle they seem to take it, that they just can't make a decent Superman film. And what I was hoping for is a decent Superman film. And it's okay if he's got friends involved. as long as it's decent on the Superman. As far as Batman, they've done Batman so many different ways. I was pretty much open to Lime Rita Spice Batman or
Fiesta Taco Batman.
I think we're overdue for Fiesta Taco Batman.
I thought we were going to get that in a dream sequence in here. I thought he was going to be like working a taco truck at one point. a stewardess. Like, I didn't know what was... There were points in this movie where I'm like, hey, anything can happen. Anything can happen now. All bets are off.
Well, I guess, and before I go into what I actually got versus what I was expecting, I'll let you guys go first. When you got to see it, first, what made you, I guess, what made you happiest about it?
Cole, you can go first on that one.
I think one of the things from the outset that made me happy, we talked a lot about, Andy and I, about even beforehand of Catherine and I finally getting a chance to go see this, was, the inevitable Zack Snydering.
Oh, man, yeah.
That we were prepared for that. But the odd thing is...
For the studio audience, what is Zack Snyder?
Zack Snydering is... we'll kind of explore that as we go along.
Okay. Have you ever looked at leather? Like a fine leather? I don't know how he does it, but he somehow manages to shoot through that, and that...
Yeah, in most of the ways, Joss Whedon shoots through glass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, somehow he has basically tanned the leather to the point of being translucent.
He shoots through Clint Eastwood's anus. Every shot.
Wow.
He just lines it up, puts that square on it, goes dead through his Clint Eastwood's anus. It's impressive. It's impressive.
And that's exactly the reaction that I would expect from... said shot. So.
Snyder was the first to discover that was possible while visiting the set of I think it was when it was probably Gran Torino. That's where he realized that you could do that. But
have you seen Sliding Doors? Rue McClanahan's anus. I'm just saying, it's work. It's working in Hollywood.
It happened. So basically, there are two ways that Zack Snyder Snyders things, and there's the subtle Snydering, which is some of the best opening sequences in film. And I really think what I loved about this movie is it's like, hey, here's an idea. Why don't we tell the story that, you know, is so well known to every man, woman, and child in the world, that, of course, being Batman's origin story.
Mm-hmm. And Superman's.
Well, but, I mean, but the Superman that was already established, this is technically a sequel to The Man of Steel.
Right.
But we all know Batman's story. Everyone does. It's on the SAT, for God's sake.
Right. Right.
Literally.
There's cuneiform somewhere that burned up in the Library of Alexandria.
National Geographic did a special where they tried to find some corner of the Earth, some distant tribe, some ancient peoples who weren't painfully aware of Batman's origin, and it proved impossible.
That's right. That's right. There's a
in the world
tribal writing deep in the jungle that says if you can be anything you want to be Batman.
That's right. Be who you are, unless you're Batman, then kill a saber-toothed tiger. That's provide for your village, damn it.
I mean, they're even to the point where they're like etchings in stone of that mimic the pearls.
Oh my God! Can I say okay? So.
Don't talk to me about the pearls.
It's dumb. So dumb. I'm sorry, but it's that is the most Zack Snyder. That is like.
Yeah, I give you. I love the fact that they got the origin out of the way in the opening titles, but he still had to Zack Snyder sex it up by just turning something simple into something ridiculous.
Now, I've got to interrupt here. I've got to interrupt here because you said the P word, the pearls. Now, in the comics, now, you guys are the comic gurus. You're going to have to advise me. In the comics, does it have her pearl necklace go all over the friggin' place?
Okay, what that was is Frank Miller in The Dark Knight.
Okay, Frank Miller, I'm talking to you, Frank. Really expensive pearls are literally threaded with a knot in between each pearl.
I think this is just indictment on
if a pearl necklace breaks, only one pearl falls off.
Now, this was actually what Frank Miller was brilliantly doing was an indictment on Thomas Wayne.
Because he bought our cheap pearls.
Yeah, he was a cheap bastard. And I guarantee you his mistress had a proper set of pearls with knots in them.
Here's my thing, right? The circumstances that lead from Bruce Wayne being Bruce Wayne to becoming Batman are more believable than the way that those pearls broke in the opening sequence of Batman versus Superman.
In the opening sequence, not only the pearls require tremendous, I had less suspension of disbelief for the last son of Krypton than I had for the Martha Wayne death sequence, in which her pearls caught Joe Chill's pistol in such a way that I'm no expert, but I've seen a lot of forensic files and other true crime shows.
You also know geometry. Let's just put it that way.
Core geometry dictates that with the proximity and the angle, the scene of your stereotypical no screaming Bruce Wayne.
Right.
Martha's head should have been splattered all over him, all over Bruce, Thomas, Joe Chill, the alley.
Passing vehicle.
Yeah, passing vehicles. There should have been coverage of, like, a taxi driver. You know, looking like all of a sudden his side mirror looks like the back seat in Pulp Fiction.
It should have grounded.
Been a god-awful mess. There would be nothing left. He may as well have beheaded her for that proximity with that particular caliber of bullet.
I mean, but instead, what we have is the most Zack Snyder-y intro to a movie I've ever seen. It's like he took all of Watchmen and just took the coal that was Watchmen and just squeezed it so hard that it became the diamond of 30 seconds of pearls getting caught in the recoil of a gun and exploding. Just explode. Boosh! Just literally, it was an orgasm of of sand entering an oyster. I mean, I wish we'd have seen that weird Nova scene leading up to the... I want to see the origin story of the pearls now. I want to see the sand getting irritated, becoming a pearl, ending up in a... You know, getting put on the... Just goosh! Just
bitch! I want to see some little Asian girl, like, holding her breath for 5 minutes and going down, prying this oyster off the sea floor, bringing it up in a little basket to the waiting men in the
boat.
Well,
you wouldn't, because those are cheap-ass pearls.
15 minutes in, and we've only talked about the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Pearls out of muscles.
There you go.
It was just... And then you get the scene of Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Thomas Wayne with his aggressive mustache. That mustache... That mustache could have fought off Joe Chill. He could have fought that much. It could have come off his face and fought him.
Thing about it is, you get the coverage of him, the shot of him balling his fist up, and then they get the shot of his face where he's balling his mustache up.
It's just
impossible. But only Negan can pull that off.
Well, here's the thing, right? He was going forward, and his mustache was going forward. It was like a race to see who get to him first.
And at that point, it's little wonder Joe Chill shot him.
I would have shot him in the mustache if I was
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Well, he tried to shoot Martha in the mustache, apparently.
That's right. But yeah, so that was like...
So
that.
I guess I would say I have a love-hate relationship with that. I love the fact that he had the foresight to say, let's get this crap out of the way in the easiest possible form. We all know this, and this is supposed to take place like 20-some-odd years later.
Right.
30 years later. So let's be done with it. But then he had to Zack Snyder it. He could not. It's like a Tomcat.
You can't leave it alone. You can't leave it alone.
He had the perfect thing.
He had
still
a scab.
Has to back up to the couch and piss on it.
He had a scab that just would not
just
be picked.
He could not. He walked by. He thought about it. I'm going to get yelled at, but... Oh, sweet relief.
Well, I was with it. You know what? I was like, I knew going in that it was Zack Snyder, so I knew what I was going to get, right? It was shot on the surface of Mars, the entire movie. Somehow, they can't get a rover up there, but Zack Snyder took the crew of Batman vs. Superman and shot it under the red light of Mars, the entire movie.
Literally, the cast and crew and everyone involved with The Martian was envious, because they're like, our movie took place on Mars, and we couldn't get the budget for that.
And I was with it, knowing it was Zack Snyder. I was with it up until the point where Batman and at this point in the movie, we did not know it was a dream. When the bats, he's like, and now I'm flying, and the bats are lifting me up, and I'm like, what the shit is happening right now? Yeah, exactly. Like, and then I woke up. Okay, so that's what we're gonna do. Whole shit ton of dream sequences. Fine, Zack Snyder. And I lied to you, Catherine, and I'm sorry that I lied to you, but going into this movie, I had read one thing, okay?
Okay.
And that one thing was that it took some, you know, some serious Horatio Perot detective skills to put some shit together.
You probably didn't realize you did this until, you know, just now.
Well, going into it, I had read a thing that said that there was going to be a 3.5-hour director's cut for this movie. Okay?
What?
Yeah, and there is, and it might get a theatrical release. There's a 3.5-hour director's cut of this movie. So looking at the ticket and seeing that it said 2.5 hours, and knowing that there was a 3.5-hour produced movie, let alone the extra probably 4 or 5 hours that they had to cut out, you know, that end up on the editing room floor, I'm like, this has to be a hatchet job. Like, there has to be stuff. If they're going to release, if the day before the movie comes out, they're like, wait a second, we're going to release a 3.5-hour director's cut. Well, then why are you giving us a 2.5-hour movie now? Oh, that's right, because you needed to put something out. Okay, fine. But I'm going in.
Well,
it's
we had
fine.
To force them to postpone Captain America.
Right. No, exactly.
It probably all came in the form of an afternoon nap somebody took.
So there was that. So I knew that going in, and that is pertinent to my feelings on this movie.
Okay.
Which I will get into later once we get into the real breakdown. But you asked what your initial question an hour and a half ago before Cole and I got a hold of it was, what did we like about this movie?
Yeah.
And I loved, and I think that this is the saving grace for the movie, and I think this is the saving grace for the DC universe right now as a movie universe, and that is Ben Affleck as Batman. I think that period, that's it right there. Amazing.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think Ben Affleck, two things actually made me happy about what I was seeing. Actually three. Okay. number one was, while we're talking about origin stories, all we had to do with Superman is go see his mom on the farm and him having a brief chat with his dead dad, who everybody knows is dead. So right. We
don't have to explain what a Kansas farmer is doing in the Arctic.
Yes. Yes. They did it without having to either reference it in conversation. Gosh, ever since you died during the blankety blank blank blank.
Gee, Dad, nice to see you, but aren't you dead?
Yeah. Plus he could go see Mom without, you know, asking if the pod was still in the garage or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? They could just have those scenes, those connections with his past without rehashing his origin. Thank you.
I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that wholeheartedly.
Happiness number two. And this is, if you know me, you love me. No screeching to a halt for a sex scene. Thank God.
I don't know. I wish it would have screeched to a halt right there when he yelled Martha, and then he was sort of banged. Just bang it out.
There should have been a screeching to a halt sex scene with Lex Luthor and the Senator.
Oh, don't get me started.
I did like a little of that Amy Adams side booby that we got a little bit of there. I thought that maybe we were going to screech to a halt at that point, but we didn't.
Yeah.
The third thing that made me happy was, well, now there's four. The third thing that made me happy, and I'm sure we'll get into this, is that was a phenomenal representation of Wonder Woman. I was proud.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, I'm glad you brought Wonder Woman up, because the one thing I did get exposed to rather heavily was just the whining and pissing and moaning and everything that went with Gal Gadot's casting. And I think a lot of it is people realize, you know, if they cast Ben Affleck as Batman, there's your Batman for the duration.
Right.
In the same way that, you know, fill in the blank is, you know, Chris Hemsworth is your Thor. I mean, the Incredible Hulk seems to be the only one who gets interchangeable, and thank goodness they've settled on Ruffalo. But, you know, I think people realize once they've set this, it's going to be pretty well set in stone. This is the one you're going to have for the duration of the franchise. And everybody's like, oh, she's too scrawny, she's too this, she's too that. And I think there have only been, like, two people that were put in front of me as potential Wonder Womans. And years ago, there was an actual Greek actress, God forbid, who I thought was just, you know, one picture, like, oh my God, she's a freaking stunner. And there's your Wonder Woman. That never happened. But then they put Gal Gadot out there, and I'm like, okay, she doesn't just jump out at you and say, Wonder Woman! But I can see where they were coming from. And she's not this waifly thin. It's not like they put Cosette in a Wonder Woman costume.
Yes, exactly.
It is, she gives exactly the kind of, you know, demigod kind of look you want with a character like that.
Yeah.
Because she's outside of, you know, Superman represents this sort of pinnacle, but, you know, is sort of the human-looking alien. You have Batman as your human being, but then you have in Wonder Woman this kind of, this is, you have your science fiction, you have your street level, you know, this is your plausible character, human grounded character, and then you have mythology and magic,
right,
and the truly unquantifiable.
Right.
Yeah, I was so happy with her, I almost didn't get confused at her abrupt appearance in the movie out of nowhere. Sorry. Yeah.
Her presence there, apart from like looking at fake swords and inexplicably driving around being rich, almost serves no purpose, but then part of the purpose of this movie was to serve no purpose. I hate to sway away from things we loved a bit, but you know, I love the fact that we're trying the Empire build.
Right.
But you know, Marvel, when you're following on the heels of Marvel Empire building, you don't come in an Empire build with straw. When you're looking over here at Marvel, who for years has been Empire building with bricks.
Well, okay, so I'm going to get into the thing that bugs me the most.
Yeah, you go ahead and turn the page, Andy. You can take us to our gripes.
Because the gripe isn't so much that this is two movies.
Right.
That they have jammed into one movie. And because of that, it gets very confusing, and I think a lot of things got cut out that were not, that shouldn't have been. So here's the thing. I know going in what's supposed to happen as a giant comic book nerd. Like, I know what's supposed to happen. And it's little things. Like in the fight at the end with Doomsday, all of a sudden, she has a lasso of truth. Apropos of nothing, she has a lasso of truth. No, there's no mythology built around it. Nobody knows what it is as far as the movies go, but there it is. You know, I'm a
God bless him for not having to explain it.
Well, but am I? Because yes, I think it kind of, that one kind of needs a little bit of explanation. Like, a little bit. Like see it. Mention it. Something.
Well,
set the precedent.
The fact that it just sort of came into use. We're up to that point. She's engaging Doomsday with sword and shield.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know.
But
like
here's the thing.
Perseus from Clash of the Titans. And then all of a sudden, when the chips are down, here's the thing. And if you know Wonder Woman, she's got the lasso. And it's kind of okay, but the fact that it just sort of, why wasn't it brought up, brought in, done something, the lasso itself needs to become a part of the story.
Mm.
And the other thing, I don't buy why Superman and Batman don't like each other. Like, I don't think that they focused heavily enough on that part of the story to make it believable.
I understand why Batman doesn't like Superman. But
they didn't really give Superman a chance to express that he doesn't like Batman's brand of justice. And while they do a brilliant job of suggesting that Batman has been actively in the vigilante business over in Gotham a lot longer than Superman has been in Metropolis.
Right.
They never really give an opportunity for Superman to give voice to the fact that, look, this isn't the way you should conduct yourself. This isn't, you know, beating and branding people. And, you know, are you dispensing a true kind of justice? Or are you just, you know, making compensating.
Right. The reason that I believe that it, and this is another thing, another reason that I believe that it should have been two movies, is that if we would have spent 2 hours developing a rivalry between Batman and Superman, I would have believed the fight, you know, but instead we have this machination of a Lex Luthor who really doesn't fit the universe that they've tried to shoehorn him into, and I have a theory about that as well.
Okay. I think he's going to be his own topic.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
I think you got a point there. But this is two movies made into one in exactly the same way that The Hobbit was two movies made into three.
Right. No,
yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Each of them suffered for being pared down or being grossly inflated.
Mm-hmm.
in exactly the same way. They're literally the opposite sides of the same coin.
Well, Lex Joker.
Oh, right. Yes, Lex Joker.
What other gripes do you have other than him?
Well, it's so I didn't believe the animosity between them. I didn't believe that they built it up enough. So I get,
especially not for such a knockdown drag out.
Right, and I think there are a lot of things, like we know that it's 18 months after the battle for Metropolis, right? Like we're given that information. It's 18 months later, but they do such a good job in Dark Knight Returns of setting up that fight that they don't give us that, and I think I'm colored by Dark Knight Returns. Like all of a sudden Batman has this power armor, right? That's insane power armor that he can use to go toe to toe with Superman, given that he, you know, knocks him down a few pegs with some kryptonite. Great. How is it powered? Where did it come from? The only real scene we get with it is Alfred tinkering with the microphone and the shielding and the headset, and that's like the big, you know, that's the big thing for it. And then all of a sudden he steps out, I'm ready, and he steps out and he's got this friggin' giant armor on. In the comic book, the entire armor's run by the central grid for the city, and he takes out half the city fighting Superman because it takes that much power. Like, I don't think that the weight is there. You know, I don't think that it's hefty enough for me to really buy the impetus, the importance of the fight, you know?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just a fight between two guys. And I get why Superman is fighting Batman, because they have his mom, even though it's Superman, yeah, and he has no compunction against killing, and he's faster than anything, so he could probably just get there and stop it. But hey, you know, movies got to be movies, so yeah, you got to have your fight, you got to have your drama. But that's it. It just felt like a lot of things were left out of the movie that if they were included in the movie, I would have liked the movie a lot better. That's all. Like, for all of it, for all of this movie's faults, I've come around to liking it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I am.
Personally, I enjoyed the daylights out of it. I loved it. And I thought it was one of the best Superman movies ever made, in my personal opinion. I think it did Superman really, really well. I'll play my girl card in that. Okay, the Batmobile and the Bat this and the Bat that and all the tech and the armaments and shooting and
right,
and you know.
Right.
The manly kill machine thing going on, drug on for a while. But that's my own personal taste in entertainment. But overall, I really loved the film. Would you have anything else to tell, Cole?
Yeah, I did want to add, though, one of the things we talked about, you know, Zack Snydering it. The fight scenes were definitely Zack Snydered up. To some degree, I, you know, would be happy with some of the aspects, but other aspects were like, okay, that's, you know, ridiculously over the top and to the point of being unnecessarily so. And yet, at times, you know, some parts of it were good. They were well thought out. That's a good approach to take, what have you. But one of the biggest problems I had was the, okay, Luther goes way out of his way to get his kryptonite rock into the country.
Right.
You know, despite any giant hurdles, places, way, or what have you. The problem that I have is Batman's acquisition thereof, which is given to you, the exposition of this is given to you in a very simple shot of Lex arriving and pretty much, you know, practically having to be careful to watch his footfalls to not, like, fall on his ass from all of the ordnance, all the spent shells. Remember, it was like the St. Valentine's Massacre on steroids that happened there, which suggests that Batman comes rolling in and just to a working laboratory full of
working lab people.
But just people who otherwise are not, they're not part of a criminal organization.
Right.
This isn't like the Joker's henchmen who all know that the Joker's nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's going around killing people and stealing things, and they're complicit to the point of just being downright agreeable. These are just ordinary people working an ordinary job, and Batman apparently is going to come hoving in here with the, you know, full-on war ordnance and take the place down so he can steal a rock. And this is, again, Zack Snyder not understanding the core concept behind the superhero.
Right.
This was, to me, was a quick exposition shot that was every bit as ruinous as the overdone not top scene in Watchmen, where it removed them from the ability, and I've talked about this many times before, it took away their ability to simply walk away from it because there were dead people. They didn't just like beat up a bunch of criminals who tried to made the mistake of trying to mug them. They were, you know, Laurie stabs a guy in the neck and they use somebody as a human shield against bullets. And you can't just simply shrug your shoulders and say, wow, that was something.
Yeah.
You have a responsibility to the fact that people are undoubtedly dead. And this, you know, it removes Batman and Bruce Wayne simultaneously from any responsibility for wanton destruction of private property.
Uh-huh.
And endangering of innocent lives. And it just,
right.
That's the most non-Batman thing. You don't see it played out. But if you think about it for more than 2 seconds, you realize, wow, you really missed it. And that, to me, undermined a lot of what he thought he was trying to do there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, and, you know, and the question for me, and I don't want to have this conversation mm-hmm. with myself about Batman, but my question has to be, was it premeditated? Were Batman's obvious murders premeditated? I don't want to have that conversation with myself about Batman, but I do. I have to have it. Like, was what he did a premeditated, you know, attack? Was what he did a premeditated murder? Like, I don't want to have that conversation, but damn it if I don't have to have it.
You're forced into it because Zack Snyder can't keep his pants on. As it were.
Okay, well, who wants to start with elephant room elephant?
Well, I'm going to wait because I have a theory.
Lex Joker. Who wants to start?
I really, the Lex Joker corollary there is so painfully obvious. It's like we can't do the Joker because that's Suicide Squad. We can't do anything but suggest the existence of the Joker as a pre-existing enemy of Batman. And one of the things that makes Lex Luthor interesting to a modern audience is, you know, something that John Byrne does in The Man of Steel, and that is to move Lex Luthor out of the mad scientist realm and make him a kind of villain that you can associate with something you love to hate, like
millennials.
Millennials.
I'm talking about in the comic. Is that, you know, Byrne brilliantly turned him into like the evil businessman, and I think they were trying to do that, but they felt like, okay, the sensibilities are off. That's very 80s. Very 90s, and even with Occupy movements, it still isn't going to play. We need Lex Luthor to be the, like, what's his name from Facebook guy?
Yeah.
If he was insane. Or, like, obviously. And that's what they were trying to do.
You have one friend, whether you want him or not.
That's right.
That was MySpace.
That's Tom. He's the Tom. He's what's happened to Tom since Facebook came.
Half of the Tom after MySpace failed. But yeah, the problem was they were trying to reach a millennial sort of sensibility. And you ultimately have this character that doesn't know what it wants to be when it grows up. It's not a good fit. It doesn't, as a character, Lex Luthor almost has no place, because they're trying too hard to, I guess, sort of make him more and more like he's part Joker, so you've got that connection to Batman, so your Batman fans, there's something they can hang their hat on, and then you've got the Superman fans, they're getting their latest incarnation of Lex Luthor. And, you know, I've seen a lot of different little things people have put together, like somebody put together this montage of all these different Lex Luthors, including even from the animated series. And it was just like all these images. It's like, this is Lex Luthor, this is Lex Luthor, this is Lex Luthor. And the last one is, this is not Lex Luthor. And I have to agree, it didn't feel from the, that was one of the only things that I went in and got exactly what I expected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was a Lex Luthor that was unworkable.
Yeah. All it said to me was, the only thing this movie is missing is Keith Ledger.
Or the only thing this movie is missing is Lex Luthor.
Well, okay, so I have a theory.
No, I was never mind.
I know, yeah. But so I have a theory, and here's my theory, and it goes back to what I was saying about the director's cut, and I think that we need to I think once that director's cut comes out, we need to revisit this this topic.
As you've got half a day to kill.
That's right. But so we are missing something. Okay, we are missing something in the movie, and by what I mean, I don't mean we have missed something. I mean there's something was removed from the movie that will make it so that we understand what happened, because it was a very abrupt. I didn't like the depiction of Lex Luthor from Jump Street. Okay, I didn't like it, but there was a very abrupt change about an hour and 10 minutes into the movie, where he went from being a forceful, cocksure, shrewd-ish business guy to the Joker. He went insane, and like, off camera. Like, it was off camera, something happened, he went insane, he walked back into frame.
Yeah, it's like, and he was stepped into the bathroom at LexCorp, took a tinkle, and came out insane.
Right, and so we're missing something. So what I think, and there was a released cut scene that they released the day after the movie, I know, shock and surprise, to try to make something make sense that didn't, and that was a scene where he was on the Kryptonian ship, and he stumbles into a room, and in that room is a monster guy, and that monster guy has three boxes that were the same boxes that that made the Cyborg in that scene, which we haven't even got to yet.
Exactly.
The ham-fisted jam of, you know, the Inter-by-Force Justice League that they gave us. And those boxes dissolve, and one is dissolved into Lex Luthor. So my theory is that at some point, those are mother boxes from the planet Apocalypse. Mother boxes are the supercomputer, techno-organic supercomputers in the DC universe that allow you to do all kinds of crazy stuff, like super hyper god technology that the Apocalyptians use.
It's kind of a magic tech that you use when you kind of painted yourself into a corner.
Yeah.
Or you okay,
wouldn't hurt.
No, yeah, it would not hurt to have that on hand if you
do something like that. It's a writer's EpiPen.
So you've got this situation with you've got this situation where Lex Luthor's off camera goes crazy. I think that what happened was that one of these in this cutscene, you know, it basically absorbs into him, becomes part of him. And it becomes basically an apostle for Darkseid. And we're given a lot of Darkseid information in that nightmare sequence, the dream sequence
exactly,
that he has,
yeah, where you have
with the parademons, the guy, the crazy winged demon, gun-toting weirdos.
So he kind of becomes possessed, sort of.
Yeah, I think he kind of becomes like touched by, you know.
And the thing is, the presence of that would also explain the Batman dream sequence in a way that it would allow for that sort of, this essence of Darkseid has been loosed upon the Earth.
Yes, completely. Exactly. So I think that,
for otherwise, the dream sequence seems to come out of nowhere.
So I think what, we have
kind of like the Flash.
Oh my God!
Well, the Flash works in that. My sincere hope with that, borrowed from Crisis on Infinite Earths, Flash in there, is that that's something that will not even happen until Justice League Part 2.
Okay.
I would like to see that happen.
It's comics, you know, so that makes this a Thursday, but...
No, exactly.
No, I would literally like to see this, that be something that doesn't even happen on screen for so many years that you've almost forgotten you ever saw it when the two are connected. I would rather see that in the second part of Justice League than in the first, because that makes it the more vitally... It would be a stronger connection in this universe building than if you just like put it out in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, back to Andy. What Andy was talking about going when he went crazy. I thought, and of course this was me scrambling for justification. I thought he went nuts when he went into the ship, and he connected up with the ship and got the welcome to the ship, welcome to the computer. Here's a huge hunk of knowledge and thoughts and stuff for your head.
And I think I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong. I think that six of one is half dozen of another, because I think that they supposedly happen at roughly the same time. You know.
Yeah, because the appearance of the character that a lot of people are equating to Steppenwolf.
Right.
From Apocalypse appears anyway to be happening on the ship anyway.
Exactly. So I think it all happens. I think that there's a big portion of that we haven't seen yet. And in that portion, he goes banana crackers, he goes gorilla biscuits, and it makes a lot more
crazy.
Yeah, it makes a lot, because then at the end when he's in the prison cell. And he's like, "Eh, they're coming, blah blah blah, stick your finger in my butt." Whatever he says, it makes a lot more sense that he's gone sideways.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that, you know, okay, we have some precedent for him being a weird apostle for Darkseid and what's coming down the pike then. You know, and I believe that to be true. I believe that that's what we're missing. And again, I think that they've done us a discredit by not including all of that in the movie, or at least splitting. It was two movies. It was a Batman Superman movie and a Death of Superman movie, and they jammed it together in one movie. And they tried to make the through line Wonder Woman, but they didn't give her enough screen time to make her the through line.
Yeah. I wish you would have had more screen time, but then it'd be a 4-hour movie.
And the other big elephant in the room is this wasn't the dawn of justice. This was the rush to justice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's something that kind of that bothers me more than anything, because that was my big concern going in. Is we're going to be in such a god-awful rush to get to the Justice League that we're going to throw everybody in the film. And I didn't think it would be possible to do anything worse than just cramming everybody in the third act. I didn't realize you could cram everybody in the third act in such a piss poor way that it would make having them all just appear on the scene and fight Doomsday seem more viable.
Right. Right. Like, so you found this drive that says metahumans, and all of a sudden, you know, you're watching these, and that's how you're going to introduce your characters? This was the most ham-fisted way of doing that.
That Lex Luthor's been doing all the footwork.
Right, and
you're using stolen files to... I'm having a hard time figuring out where the justice part's coming in.
Well, the gross mischaracterization of Batman in this thing really bothered me, and this is what I mean, is at the end, after the Clark Kent funeral, he's standing there and Gal Gadot walks up and he's like, "You have to help me find these other people like you. We're gonna need their help."
And like, she got a whole bat cave full of tech. I'm like a goddess.
Well, never once in the history of Batman, whether it be on TV, movies, or comic books, has Batman ever said, "I need anyone's help." If Batman is saying
outside of the super friends,
right?
Help is a four-letter word.
If Batman wants to find the other metahumans, it's so he can put them in a cage. If he doesn't want their help, like that was never Batman's job, and that kind of bugged me. Like
oh, absolutely. I mean, literally, I need your help is like Fonzie saying I was wrong.
Right.
I think you're
so that really bugged. It just that bugged me. There was a lot of weird mischaracterizations. A lot. The timing was bad, I think, too. Like the one thing. Okay, so of all the things we've talked about, there's one thing about this movie that bugged me worse than anything else.
Oh. Okay.
That took me completely out of the movie. Okay, it wasn't Lex Joker. It wasn't the fact that, you know, I feel like it was two movies jammed into one movie. I can deal with all that. Like I said, regardless of any of that, I've come around to really enjoying the movie for what it is. And I'm actually, now that I've seen it, looking forward to this Suicide Squad movie that everybody's poo-pooing all over. I'm actually looking forward to it. Because if they can make if they can take this monstrosity and put a bow tie on it and give it a fanny pack and send it to Six Flags, I'm thinking that they might be able to do something with this other thing. So, it's, and this is going to sound so petty, but it took me completely out of the movie every time it happened. Anytime Wonder Woman appeared, they played the weird Greek lyre music, the Wonder Woman theme, but they would just play it.
Notice.
They would just play it. So it would be this Hans Zimmer score, right? Like you would have this really intense, dark Hans Zimmer score. You know, Batman and Superman are squaring up against Doomsday. They're going to take the fight to the monster. They're a team now, you know, because somebody said the word Martha, and that's Batman's trigger word. So they're ready to go. That's Batman's safe word. Is Martha, how'd you know? Have you been in my cave? Fourth meal. But all of a sudden, Wonder Woman drops in, and it's like... It's like
cue the pan flute.
It's like somebody played the Terminator theme through a zither. It's like... And I'm just like, it's like out of nowhere, and they just drop it right over top of whatever music's playing. It's not like they wove it in, you know? So you knew it's coming. It's just like so abrupt. I'm just like, shit!
Yeah, it's not
what
like
just happened?
In Star Wars, where they like kind of like you get that little...
Yeah.
You're a little, they sort of, yeah, sort of artfully blend it into the, no, yeah, this was just sort of, bam!
Yeah, it's just in your, and you're just like, shit, what just happened? Also, can we talk about the TSA in Gotham and in Metropolis for a second? Because they have to be the worst. Because they let Wonder Woman, apparently on and off of an airplane, carrying armor, a shield, and a sword. That's... Okay, so... And also...
I have to imagine she probably has some luggage that's like Felix the Cat's bag of tricks.
Just right. She has to have a bag of holding from D&D, because she...
Yeah, probably a cloaking spell or some crap like that, yeah.
She does have an invisible plane, which why she didn't take that is beyond me.
How do you know she didn't?
Because she was on a plane when she left.
Her plane was on that plane.
Oh, okay. She was on her plane in her... It was the inception of planes.
She happened to be parked inside another plane.
But the other thing that got me about this Wonder Woman fight, right, is she does say in the movie that, you know, she divorced herself from mankind, you know, for X number of years, because why would I want to help them, blah, 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 nuclear bomb, I've become, you know, destroyer of whatever. But then she comes back to fight Doomsday.
Yeah.
Why?
I'm thinking maybe just, you know, that... When
well,
are you going to get a chance?
After a while, you get the itch.
Yeah, when are you going to get a chance to do that again?
But she didn't... Here's my thing, is she didn't step in when Superman was fighting Zod in Metropolis, right? She didn't step in.
Well, that's probably what got her interested in coming there in the first place.
But granted, you're right. But she has no idea what Doomsday is. There wasn't even a news report with like Superman just getting a mic thrust in his face, like, I don't know if I can do this one on my own, and just running off. Like, she decided on her own that this one was too big for these two guys to fight, unless she just wanted to fight a thing, you know. And that was confusing to me too, is that there was no.
Well, I mean, overall, everything about her presence, even though on screen it's amazing, you know, to have that good a depiction of Wonder Woman is rather just kind of, she's sort of forced into everything.
Right, and that's my thing, it's the shoehorning in of stuff like that that really bugs me, but that's beside the point.
But that's because DC, I guess in their attempt to not be Marvel, is trying to do what Marvel took years to do in a single swoop. They want instant empire building. But the thing that is,
do you think they have to do that though? Because if they,
well, they're so,
I mean,
damn
fanboys would love for it to be extended out in the same way a really good storyline is carried through a year's worth of books, but you know, movies are different. You have one chance to tell your story, and it's got to be good, and you've got to be all in, because you don't know if you're going to get a sequel or not. And even if you do get a sequel, how many years it's going to be until the next sequel. And that's just the nature of the film industry. And I think that they feel obliged to throw everybody and their cousin in there just to ensure
but
that.
But also, the thing that it was with the Marvel movies, even absent a good chunk of their own universe, because nobody came up with this brilliant idea in time, the Marvel recognized that empire building doesn't happen overnight. And Warner seems hell-bent to ignore that.
Well,
they could have built a franchise that was every bit as strong, if not potentially stronger, had they had the patience to do it.
Right.
And so, I saw that coming a mile away.
So I'm changing my theory.
Okay.
After talking about it and hearing you guys talk, I think we have a sleeper movie. Okay? So here's what I think. I think that Warner understands the power of their secondary market. I think that Warner, what they've done is they put together a 2.5-hour movie that was supposed to be two movies. It's supposed to be a 3.5-hour movie. The actual cut of this movie is 3.5 hours long. Mm-hmm. But they weren't going to release that in a theater, so they released a 2.5-hour movie to placate people, to make some money, to get some names out there.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you want to see, this is a reversal, okay?
Okay,
this is a flip from the way it used to be, which is where the movie that you went and saw would be longer than the movie that you bought because you had to put it on VHS tapes. I think that the movie that it's supposed to be, I think that the movie that's going to answer all of these questions is the movie we're going to get on the DVD. So I think that they knew, this might be very shrewd, I think that they knew that they were not going to be able to put out the movie that they needed to put out to answer all these questions, so they put out a Zack Snyder-y Big Flash movie with a bunch of stuff in it that's going to make some money and draw a bunch of attention.
You
and
got
then,
the lunch portion on screen. So.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you buy the actual DVD, it's going to have the full narrative on it. So we're going to.
Plus, in this day and age of video on demand, how are you going to sell a DVD?
No, this is brilliant.
Yeah, I think I follow you there, and I have to agree. Couple of things, though. One of the more interesting things is this movie has successfully begun to raise the question of the relevance of the movie review.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yes.
Because this movie, more than anyone before it, was pretty much widely panned as a complete disaster. And so, you know, and everybody was waiting for it to fail. And it just keeps succeeding and succeeding to the point where, you know, I talked earlier about the, you know, not Lex Luthor, not Lex Luthor. The other thing I saw is sometimes in the online world's attempt to make a point, they fail to make their point. They sort of shoot themselves in the foot. And in this case, it was someone who had put together this thing and it showed, like, you know, the Superman, Batman poster. And then real tiny below it, like 20 some odd or 30, I think maybe as many as 32 different Marvel movies. And says, you know, in 15 days, it's outsold every single, you know,
yeah,
30 some odd Marvel movies. And like, okay, one of them was Howard the Duck. And I pointed out when I saw this post, I said, okay, your argument becomes a little dubious when you have to go out of your way to include movies that existed before the so-called Marvel movies.
Right.
Furthermore, did you just not have room for the Roger Corman Fantastic Four? Of course, that didn't get a theatrical release, so we'll remove that from the equation. But you did get a theatrical release with that god-awful Captain America movie.
Right.
You got a theatrical release with the Dolph Lundgren Punisher. Why were they not included to bolster your numbers of what it outsold?
What about all the painful Incredible Hulks?
Well, right, they were there too, but that was sort of post-Marvel movie era. But the problem I have is some people just go a little too far out of their way. You could have got away with that argument and made it stronger, saying, you know, showing the last 10 Marvel movies that it outsold, including Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man and stuff. But that's, you know, irrelevant to me. I think people put far too much, you know, because like second week that Batman vs. Superman was out, Batman vs. Superman didn't make near as much in the second week as it did in the first, yet it continues to succeed. You know, this is also this rush. You know, Ant-Man was called a flop the second it hit the theater, yet it, 3 weeks later it was declared one of the top Marvel movies. It's like, so shut up. Quit trying to judge everything 20 seconds after it comes out. But I want to get that out of the way because I really want to talk, before we close this up, about something that struck me during the course of the film.
Okay.
And that was the fact that throughout the film, in fact, I was talking to, I think, Rick from the United States of Geekdom, and it's like, wow, when I go back and see it again, I'm going to watch it with this in mind. So if you're going to go back and see it another again, keep this in mind. It is rife with tributes and nods and recognition of every incarnation of Superman and Batman that came before.
It's full of Easter eggs. Yes,
is the obvious one. One thing most people don't notice is when Lois throws the spear down into the flooded section of the derelict building, and then has to go get it, and then later has to pull Superman out of there. Okay, it's, you see the features of the original building still intact, but they're completely submerged because this, apparently they haven't got around to cleaning up this part of Metropolis yet after Zod, and this, come summer, that's going to be a mosquito farm. I'm sorry.
It's going to be gross in there. It's going to be gross.
That notwithstanding, what I see is Mrs. Tessmacher pulling Superman out with the chain with the kryptonite.
Oh, from the Superman movie. From,
yeah. I'm racking my brain out because it's not as fresh.
The stairwell.
Oh, yeah.
The clock tower flashback. You know what I'm talking about? There's this in the Nicholson Batman movie?
Yeah, the 89 Batman movie. Yeah.
Yeah. You got the major scene is in the clock tower with the indoor spirally staircase. And that had to be right from that.
Yeah, very much. There are so many little nods here and there to, you know, the different Batman and Superman incarnations both.
And on the docks, I think it was the company was like Nicholson, somebody and somebody was the company on the docks there.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
A lot of other little things there as well.
Yeah.
But there are so many wonderful little nods, and if you go in there and you start looking for them, you'll start to find. Oh, and like the burned out shell of Wayne Manor.
Yes.
and him, you know, living off site, as it were.
Right.
And Perry, too, invoked back
Dark Knight, Batman Begins.
There. Yes. Yeah, the Batman.
It's like sort of like suggesting that aspects of other incarnations might be the case. And one of the things that they did right was that when the soon-to-be late Waynes are escorting their young son from the theater, apparently the only theater in town that was showing this was in the worst part of town. But, you know, they were so full of themselves, they would go anywhere for little Bruce. But the movie they had gone to see, as you see in the poster in its little case just outside the theater, is Zorro, the original Douglas Fairbanks, is that right? Zorro.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also they were showing Excalibur there too, which is pretty rad.
The funny thing about that is, when I'm watching that, next to the poster for Zorro is a poster that I recognize, and for a split second there, I am just like racking my brain. Why do I know that poster? I couldn't make out what it was, but the graphic, I know this. I know this painting. Why do I know this? And then you get the long shot with the marquee, you know, coming soon, Excalibur. Like, damn it, I own that damn poster. Original movie poster I bought like 30 years ago.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's just
so
much.
The other thing that's neat about that is the vintage Zorro poster sets gives you, you know, gives the fanboy something to hang their hat on.
Right.
This was the very movie that they went to go see. But the other thing that what's amazing, a wonderful little subtle thing that they did in the production design, is Coming Soon Excalibur sets a date. It gives you a
hard date,
Hard date in history. This is the day, this is the year that Bruce Wayne was orphaned, and that's why if you project forward, you can roughly equate how old Bruce Wayne is, quote-unquote, today.
Right.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And it's a wonderful, very subtle, very cerebral little thing that was done there that it didn't say, you know, you didn't have a big thing up 20-some-odd years ago. You're left to figure that one out on your own, and it's all given to you.
Well, I wanted to go around. We need to wrap up here, but I want to go around real quick, just in case there's anything that you thought we missed that really needs to be at least a shout-out for. The only other thing that I could think of is the Clark-Lois relationship was really well handled. You didn't have any of the awkward mystery silliness or anything like that. They had a good, solid, straightforward relationship, and I think that the portrayal of Lois is somebody who realizes what kind of relationship this is, and is not a even though she gets put in situations, isn't a femme fatale.
Right.
And so I really appreciated that, even though she's a very minor character in this. Was there anything that you guys thought that we didn't touch base on that?
One big shout out goes to Jeremy Irons as Alfred,
yes.
Which was just a scene stealer. Like I have liked most of the Alfreds as portrayed on screen. Matter of fact, I don't think that they've dropped the ball once in an iteration of Alfred.
Go was amazing, of course.
Michael Caine,
you get no complaints.
Yeah.
But Jeremy Irons as a badass, because that's the thing that most people don't depict as Alfred, and I think Petrie on Gotham is doing a really good job of it. But what most people don't get about Alfred is he is as much a butler or a bodyguard as he is a butler.
And, right, exactly.
And you don't get that from he came. Who do you think came up with Batman? Do you think Batman kept his Batman life a secret from the one person he can trust in his life? Of course not. So yeah, Alfred came up with Batman. Alfred helped train with Batman. Alfred picked up a lot of tricks along the way and had a lot to begin with. So you get this badass Alfred that you just haven't seen on in a movie yet. And I think he did, and smartass, sardonic, funny, caring.
Yeah,
like,
no matter how old you get, you'll be a little shit to me.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, caring.
He almost, Alfred, I think on screen from, you know, Burton forward, Alfred almost becomes like, who's it, John Gielgud in Arthur?
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah.
It's almost like there's always been that little bit of, you know, do you want me to wash your dick, you little shit?
Yeah, because you know, you at some point you surpass the idea of a butler and you become not only a mentor, but, you know, a friend as well, and you have to sit there, much like his relationship with the various Robins, but more so, you have to watch this person that you consider, you know, in a lot of respects, a son, that you can't stop because you aren't dad, but he's going to go out every night and fight Superman, you know, help Superman fight Doomsday, go into these places and brand people, any derivation of crazy shit that Batman decides to engage in, and you have to sit there and watch it. Yeah, you're going to become a smartass, like.
Yeah.
You know, and I think
what's Batman going to do about it? Jack shit. That's what he's going to do about it. Because who else does he have?
It was the perfect combination of in my opinion, two of the best help characters in movies have been Michael Caine's Alfred as a butler and a confidant. You know, but not a badass, and the groundskeeper from the James Bond movie. If you remember the one that has to save Judi Dench in the end with the friggin' knife.
Yes.
Like, those two guys combined make the perfect Alfred, and I think we got it. So kudos to Jeremy Irons, and I hope we get a shit ton more of him in the movie.
Oh, absolutely. I hope we do get to see a lot more of him.
How about the Robin costume in the
It was cool. That was so cool. It was super cool. Like, so we're giving a nod that death in the family has happened.
Well, that's the other neat thing is that it much the way the Excalibur poster helped establish a timeline, that helped establish a timeline as well, because it said, without saying as much, without holding your hand and letting you know, guess what? Batman's been Batman for years. This isn't his first mission. It said so much with just a prop.
Right.
Set. And to me, that was one of those points where, as much as Zack Snyder this, occasionally Zack Snyder actually manages to be downright brilliant.
Right. Well, and again, that's the thing is, I'm sold on this idea now, but I really believe that there's a great version of this movie. I believe that there's a great version of this movie that when you watch it, you're going to be like, holy shit.
Yeah, now it all makes sense.
Right, right.
Well, Cole, did you have anything else you wanted to mention?
Really that everybody seems to have caught up with all the things that were, you know, bouncing around or bounced out and things like that. Again, really, you know, it was a better movie than I was anticipating. It was certainly not one of the best movies. It's not one I'm anxious to own. Mm-hmm. At least not.
You're going to buy it. You're going to buy it because we're going to talk about it. I'm going to force it.
I don't own Avengers Age of Ultron yet.
Well, and rightfully so.
Yeah, because it just didn't do it for me. This was good, but not great. It's not the movie I'm going to rush to go see again.
Well, I'm going to ask you real quick then, because this is following what you're talking about. Usually, I wrap up a what you think of how many stars or bars you would give this movie, 1 to 5 stars. But obviously, we've kind of let our opinions be clear that
we all know how many Jolly Ranchers we each.
How many bat brands I've got on my chest right now?
How many batarangs it would get? So I'm going to ask you this. Once the movie comes out on DVD, the marathon one.
Yes.
The three almost 4-hour movie version. And you cross paths with somebody who hasn't seen it yet. Which movie do you have them watch first?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a real good question. much like if you remember Daredevil, when Daredevil came out in the theater, the movie, the Ben Affleck movie, and then they released the DVD with the director's cut on it, which the director's cut was only like 20 minutes longer, but it made the movie make sense. So I would say, honestly, I'm gonna take this on two fronts. Number one, I would probably say watch, if it is what they claim it's going to be, I'm going to say watch the director's cut DVD first. The other side of that is, I've now seen this movie twice. So the first time I went and saw it, I went in blind. The second time I went, obviously I'd seen it before. I'm going to suggest to anybody that has issues, major issues with this movie, go see it again now. Because if you go see it again now, you're going to pick up on the things that you didn't, because you were trying to make sense of the things that were happening around you. So now you know all the extemporal things that are happening. You can remove those and focus on the story that they're trying to tell, and it makes a lot more sense. So I'm going to save the DVD first, if that's what it is, for sure.
Okay. Cole, what do you say?
I would say, I'm not really in a position to say which to see first. I'm really buying into the theory that, you know, the best is yet to come. So I would lean more toward the upcoming DVD release.
Okay. I would actually do the opposite.
Okay.
Because I think that I would want somebody to experience it the same way I experienced it. And that would also give them and I a lot to talk about between the two of them. And the best way to distinguish the difference is to see the shorter one before you see the longer one. And I think as far as connecting as a fan, if I'm bringing somebody into the fandom, that's how the order I'd want them to see them in.
I'm with Interesting. That. I'm with that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to let one of you two gentlemen have the final word, and it's been wonderful to come back and do a What You Think, and you guys are phenomenal.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I love it. We got to do this. We got what's next? Captain America, I think, is next.
I think so. Yeah, Captain America.
We'll be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Cole, why don't you wrap us up and we'll get out of here?
All right. Well, of course, we're coming to you from the Jedi Cole Universe, JediCole.com, and you can write to us and encourage Catherine to come back with more. What do you think?
Yeah.
With Bobby Blakey at. Excuse me.
Whoa. At
Sizzow. Oh,
I think Cthulhu just rose out of the Pacific. I'm not.
How many emojis are in that?
I was choking on my Jolly Rancher there. It was cherry flavored. I hate cherry flavored Jolly Rancher.
Oh.
That was a weird characterization, by the way.
That was one of the creepiest things I've seen on film in a long time. But you can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can check out the tweets that will come from time to time at the Jedi Cole U over on the Twitter. And we'll be back, depending on where this lands, check with us every Friday for more Hey Kids Comics. We are in the midst of Comic Capers, real crime and trial stories from the world of comic books. We're kicking it real.
We're kicking it real school. Real school. Kicking it real school. That's not a thing, is it? Nobody says that.
You did.
It is now because you made it.
I made it. I populated that reality. Thank you so much, Catherine. You're awesome.
Oh, thank you. I had a great time.
All right, guys. We'll see you very, very soon for another special edition of Hey Kids Comics. Catherine, you're awesome.
What'd you think?
See? There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Oh, Hollywood.